This is the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast, episode 97. How to find a Georgia nursing home website using nursinghome411.org.
The Nursing Home Abuse Podcast is dedicated to providing news and information for families whose loved ones have been injured in a nursing home. Here are your hosts, Georgia attorneys Rob Schenck and Will Smith.
Hello out there. Welcome back to the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. My name is Rob Schenck.
And I'm Will Smith.
This is going to be another special episode of the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. This is going to be one of those like picture pages, which that's probably not a good reference now. This is going to be like something I don't know. I'm having difficulty think. This is the fourth episode I think we've taped in the past 2 hours, but this is an episode that will be enhanced if you are watching it, because we are going to have a special guest, Richard Mollett, take us through how to use a website located at nursinghome411.org for the purposes of getting information about nursing homes in Georgia and elsewhere, and getting just information on how to prevent neglect and abuse of all types.
Yeah, Richard's one of our favorite guests. I first met him at a Consumer Voice conference last year, and he is the director of the Long-Term Care Community Coalition, the LTCCC, a nonprofit organization dedicated to improving care for seniors and the disabled through legal and policy research, advocacy, and education. It's just a bunch of research scientists who have a real heart for the elderly, and they get together, and the statistics that they come up with, the data that they come up with, is absolutely invaluable. He addresses everything from dementia care, nursing home and assisted living standards, mandatory managed long-term care, nursing home financing and quality improvement. He's written and presented trainings on everything from nursing home laws and regulatory standards, assisted living law and policy, dementia care and the use of antipsychotic drugs, caring and planning for aging persons. He's a graduate of Howard University School of Law, and he's an actual attorney. He's a member of the Maryland Bar.
And this marks his fifth appearance on the show. But before we get him on. Thank you for that introduction, Will. But before we get him on, again, I just want to make sure that if you're listening to this, you will still get benefit from the episode, no doubt. However, it's sometimes if you're visual like I am, it's better to watch, because we're going to have Richard take over the screen and you know, navigate through his website as he talks about where the information is located as we're navigating through there. And with that being said, we will go ahead and have Richard standing by. We'll go ahead and have Richard onto the show. Richard, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me again. I appreciate it.
All right. Well, Richard, let's just do this. Let's dive right into it. What is Nursing Home 411? How long has it been around? And then if you could just take us through it.
Sure. As you know, we're a nonprofit organization, Long-Term Care Community Coalition, and we are dedicated to improving care and quality of life for residents. And what we wanted to do is have a website that provided a good resource with information about quality information that residents and families and those who work with them could use to improve care and to know what to do if they weren't getting the care, the quality of life, the treatment with dignity that they need and, of course, deserve. So we put together this website, I would say, about 8 years ago now. We had a website earlier, but this was something that was really dedicated to providing that kind of information and those resources. So, and you can see the screen now?
Yep. Yes, sir.
Okay, good. So we're on the homepage. On the left-hand side, you'll see that there's always this left-hand side always shows up, I think, on any page. We have a learning center, we have nursing home information and data, an action center, and then some of our news and reports, a bit on assisted living, and then some information about our home state, which is New York, and we have a local Amazon program here. So I'll go just very quickly. The learning center has information. We have fact sheets, we have issue alerts, we have our webinars. We do monthly webinars for families and residents and advocates on nursing home issues. We have a dementia care advocacy toolkit, and we have a family and ombudsman resource center. So I will go there first just to give you, because it's a good starting point, actually. Here we show on the left-hand side some of the things that are new. So this is our announcement for upcoming webinars on nursing home care and resident-centered advocacy. Our most recent issue alert, which is on baseline care plans, under the new federal regulation, nursing homes have to develop a baseline care plan for residents within 48 hours of admission. And the baseline care plan is really important. What studies have shown, what the Inspector General for the United States Department of Health and Human Services found, was that there is a significant amount of resident harm within the first couple of days of entering a facility. And this is true for people who go in for rehab as well as people who go in for long-term care. And too often we hear that medication did not accompany a resident, medications aren't ordered by the facility for a couple of days, that facility staff don't know what to do. And as a result, residents, as you can imagine, are extremely vulnerable in those first few days. And what the federal government did, CMS, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, in the new regulations, is they said, look, we don't expect you to do a full care plan, but you at least have to have within the first 48 hours a baseline care plan to make sure that you're identifying those the resident's needs and that he or she is not going to be subject to the vagaries of not people not knowing what kind of care they need, what kind of medications they need, et cetera. And then we also have fact sheets and other issue alerts. I'll take you through them very briefly, but I wanted to show on the right-hand side, we have our upcoming webinar program, and you can watch past webinar programs as well. There are two different buttons. We record every webinar that we do, and it's on our YouTube channel, so you can access it there. And then here you can see some of those things, like resources I mentioned before, the free fact sheets on the middle line of buttons, the Dementia Care Advocacy Toolkit, and then we also provide some useful data. So very quickly, I'm going to go to the Learning Center and the fact sheets, and I just want to pull up an example. Here's bed rails. It's one of our most recent fact sheets. Mm-hmm. And so for every fact sheet, what we do is we identify as a consumer group, issues that are affecting residents and that families have identified or advocates and attorneys have identified as affecting residents. Bed rails is a very serious issue for residents, in fact. And people don't realize that it was long thought that bed rails protected a resident because they, by their nature, are supposed to stop a resident from, rolling out of bed and hurting him or herself. In fact, for most people, bed rails are extremely dangerous, and there's many, many incidents, unfortunately, very heartbreaking incidents across the country of a resident who has tried to get out of bed. Resident may have dementia, as most residents do, or a little bit of dementia, or they're confused in the middle of the night. They try to get out of bed, and they get caught up in the bed rail. Sometimes they choke. Sometimes they even die as a result. So in addressing this, the federal regulations talk about what should be done as alternatives before using a side or a bed rail. And then they talk about the need for, we talk about the need, excuse me, for informed consent, and then some other standards here regarding respect and dignity and resident beds in general. So as this is just one example, for each of these fact sheets, and they're all free. You can print it out. As I said, it's very easy to access and to download, and you can print this out, as you can see down here, and use it in any way you like. So we hear, I'm really grateful to hear, from families and from people who work with them that they distribute them to families and to residents, they use in resident family councils, et cetera.
And Richard, obviously you're getting the code from the federal code. Where is the content coming from in terms of that analysis that are in these fact sheets?
Thanks. That's a really good question. And I'm sorry I didn't mention it before. So what we have here, and we explain it very briefly at the top of every single fact sheet, is that we have the title, which is, bed rail standards, so people know. So if you go to our website and you have a concern, say your loved one has a pressure ulcer, or your loved one is, you're concerned about the medications that they're receiving, are they correct? Or here,
we're talking about bed rails, that you can search on the website for the issue about which you're concerned. You would, this fact sheet would come up. And then here you can see in purple that we include, it's 42 CFR, it's a code of federal regulations. And we also include a number, an F number. Those are both important for two different reasons. One is that the code of federal regulations is included here, not because everyone is expected to be a lawyer. Of course not. And that's why, you know, we have and why lawyers are so important is because lawyers have that kind of expertise. What I want families and residents and advocates to have is that they know that there is a citation to this. It's not just LTCCC saying this is something that you should have. It's that actually it's in the code. And everything that we include in italics here in the language, that comes directly either from the code or from the federal guidance, the federal guidance for how the code is to be implemented. And then lastly, very quickly, the F number is important. That's what's called an F tag. Whenever there is a citation for a failure to meet a section of the code, a regulatory standard, it is assigned an F tag. What does that mean for families and residents and lawyers is that you can look for any nursing home. You can see if you go to the nursing home itself, it should be available at the front desk or upon request. Or if you go online to the Federal Nursing Home Compare website, you can download or view the latest inspection reports, at least the last 3 years. And you can see, it'll designate what the F tag was, what the citation was. And this gives you a way to connect that to the quality standard. And this can be really useful for families and for residents.
Richard, just a quick question. Did I hear correctly that the F tags were going to change or they're going to?
The F tags did change. So we've talked about this in previous programs that I know is on your website or on your website, but all the nursing home regulations changed in 2016. And so essentially, you know, as we always say, the basic standards, all the residents' rights stay the same. What CMS did in changing the regulations is they basically just fine-tune, you know, how they're describing the different standards and what their expectations are for facilities in implementing those standards. So along with that, the F-tag numbers all changed as well, and we have updated them here in all of our fact sheets.
Okay, and that's my question. So they're updated here. The consumers looking at this don't need to concern themselves with that then.
Say it again, I'm sorry?
The consumers looking at this website or this consumer fact sheet don't need to concern themselves that the F tags have changed then. This has all been updated.
Correct. This is also, these are all up to date. Gotcha. The only issue would be is that for a previous year, so this was just the new survey protocols were just implemented in November of 2017, so less than a year ago. Since facilities are inspected on an average of a yearly basis, some of them, if you go to your facility's listing, if you go into the nursing home and you went to ask for a statement of deficiencies, it would still have the old numbers there.
Gotcha.
Okay. Yeah. So, but the standards are, and there's some information out there to the extent anyone is interested, you know, crosswalks from the old to the new. But this is all new and it's all up to date. If I could just mention before we move on, and importantly in terms of the having a baseline care plan, the issue we talked about before, I think that's a good example to illustrate how the regulations have changed. That's something new. So in the past, facilities did not have to have a baseline care plan. However, facilities were always required to ensure the safety of their residents from the moment they accepted them in the facility, period. And the only reason why CMS said you need to have at least, you know, a baseline care plan at the beginning is because that safety we found was not happening. In fact, the U.S. Inspector General did a report in 2014 and found that one out of three people who go to a nursing home for Medicare rehab services are harmed within an average of 2 weeks. Out of three nationwide. One of the most striking, I know this is not the subject of our discussion today, but one of the most striking reports that I've read in my entire career, because those are people, you know, oftentimes you'll hear a nursing home saying, oh, you know, if we only got more money, we'd hire more staff, et cetera. These, the Medicare rehab people are the rehab people that nursing homes get paid $4, $5, $6, $7, even sometimes $800 per day to provide care for. The independent MedPAC, which reports to Congress, has found double-digit profits off of Medicare reimbursement rates for rehab. So the fact that the staffing and the oversight and the monitoring and the appropriate care wasn't there for these residents was honestly mind-blowing to me, because I worry, well, what does that mean for residents with dementia? What does that mean for residents who have been in the facility for months or even years and depend upon the facility for significant levels of care? So two important takeaways is that, one, if anything, obviously the long-term care residents, residents with dementia, are even more vulnerable to those kinds of problems. And two, that families and residents and their loved ones should be very aware when you go into rehab, it's not necessarily something special. It's not necessarily that you're going to be getting a superior level of care, because as that study showed, one third of people were harmed within, again, 2 weeks. And the study found 59% of that harm, the majority of that harm, could have been avoided and was likely the result of inadequate or inappropriate care.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, that's common. Yeah. It's okay. So, Richard, you've taken us through the learning center, or at least some of the learning center. We've learned
there's
a lot of fact sheets. There's a lot of webinars, and I've already hyped this on other episodes, but those webinars are very informative and very,
very good.
You know, and they don't, like some webinars they drone on or whatever. These are very informative and very to the point. So I would really recommend that our audience go out and check out if anything, those webinars. But anyways, okay, Richard, go ahead.
Thanks so much. Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you very much. I appreciate it. And again, the invite to upcoming webinars is on the website in a number of places, but here in the Family Phenomenon and Resource Center, upcoming webinars, Nursing Care and Resident Centered Advocacy. They're always the third Tuesday of the month, pretty much, unless there's a holiday or something. So we want to talk next a little bit about some of the data that we provide, if that's okay.
Yep.
One of the biggest issues for that, I think virtually everyone that I speak about in nursing homes comes to staffing. And that is also what I find in my own advocacy and work when I look over some of those deficiency reports. It's almost always staffing. But what we found in the research that we've done is that staffing is very infrequently cited by the state agencies. And because of that, because it's not cited, even though it's a problem in so many nursing homes, the fact that it's not cited means that nursing homes are not penalized too often for having low staffing. And in essence, that says to nursing homes and to the nursing home industry, your low staffing levels are okay. And that is not only a good thing for the so-called, you know, as we would say, you know, bad providers, it's also a bad thing for the good providers, because it makes it much harder for a good provider to do a good job when they're under this pressure and bad providers are able to get away with having very low staffing. So we have advocated for many years, we and other organizations, for CMS to collect better information on nursing home staffing, because it is so important. So up until last year, actually the year before last, up until 2016, all the information on Nursing Home Compare, which is the federal website for nursing home information, all of the information on a facility staffing was self-reported by the facility at the time of their annual inspection for the two-week period prior to their inspection. So as, you know, when I talk to family members about this, they nod their heads because they say, oh, well, you know, when a facility is expecting, its annual inspection, it will oftentimes beef up staff. I mean, they often see that. In addition, even if they're not doing that, these staffing data were self-reported and completely unaudited by either the states or the federal government. So nobody ever checked to make sure that nursing homes were reporting accurately. Under the Affordable Care Act in 2010, that required nursing homes to report their staffing for every single day of the year and to divide up that staffing between who's assigned to provide care, who's assigned to provide administrative duties for direct care staff, and also to report other staff who are not direct care. And in addition, because this is a big issue as well, to report staff who are actually facility employees versus contract or agency staff, because that could be a big issue. So though that was required in 2010, it actually wasn't implemented until 2016. So facilities did not change their action until then. And it was reported for the first time at the end of 2017. And it's actually only since August of this year that CMS has reported all of the information that I just described on its website. Now, some of this information is now being integrated into Nursing Home Compare when you go there to look at a particular facility. However, a lot of it is not. So what we've been doing is we've been collecting these data and trying to put them together in a way that's as useful as possible. And I'll talk about that next. So if you go back to our homepage here, and then go to Nursing Home Info and Data, staffing is the first thing that we put up.
Okay,
so I'm opening up that page, and here is the latest data. So nursing homes report for every single day of the year. CMS reports that to the public on a quarterly basis. The most recent data that CMS has reported is for 2018 Q1. So your audience, particularly in Georgia, you can go there, you can click on that page. We discuss briefly what is included here. And then you could just scroll down and go to Georgia, click on it, and that should download Georgia. Now, are you able to see that? If not, I will open up that page for you.
Open up the page because we can't see the Excel spreadsheet.
Yeah, I need to. Let me just do that. There we go. Okay.
There we go. Got it.
How's that?
Got it.
Great. Okay. So what we have done is this is. We do a state file for every single state in the country. About 97% of facilities now are in compliance with this requirement, but not every facility is. So you may not see your facility here because if it is not here, it means it's either not in compliance or the data that it provided to CMS were not of sufficient or look suspicious, in short. Okay. So we have direct care staff. We also include the select non-nursing staff in this file, in this tab, and we include notes. So you can find out that information. Again, you can see the link exactly to where we got the data. Those data tools are very, very complex, which is why we make it a little bit shorter, a little bit easier here. We also include, try to make that bigger here, the national care staff averages and Georgia's care staff averages. So here you see the average staffing. And we only look at, only put here the direct care staff that is assigned to provide care. As I said to CMS, and a number of times, nobody cares if the administrator also has an RN license. Right. He or she being in the building is not providing the supervision, medical care, et cetera, to a resident that we talk about when we talk about what is needed for a resident.
Yeah.
So that's what we include here. So you can see the national care average is 3.4 hours of total direct care staff time per resident per day. The Georgia is 3.3, so it's a little bit lower than the national average. And let me just note that actually there was a report that came out 16 years ago that found that you need to have a minimum of 4.1 hours of direct care staff time per resident per day in order just to meet the clinical needs. Forget about dignity. Forget about quality of life, which you shouldn't. Those things are extremely important. But just looking at clinical measures, at least 4.1 hours of direct care staff time was needed. And actually now, because resident acuity has increased, people are living longer, they're staying at a nursing home longer, that actually it's more like 4.6 to 4.8 hours of direct care staff time would be a good number. 3.4 is average.
Richard, can you go back to the direct care staff label?
Sure.
I just want to make sure I understand something. So this is sure. The numbers that we're looking at. The first one is the